process of working with a client, how your firm over the years, how it starts, how the consultation continues, what happens?
Well, it's usually pretty consistent. I mean, as you know, every client's going to be different.
Yeah.
But it generally, usually they call and you try to find out how they happen to be calling. If we don't know them, you know, we may know them already. If we don't know them, we ask, usually in a very subtle way, how they happen to get a hold of us.
Uh-huh.
I mean, why they called us. If they said they got their name out of the Yellow Pages, then we say, well, it's been nice talking to you. We don't want people calling us for the Yellow Pages. They say, well, they saw an article in the paper or magazine, or they know so-and-so, or they've seen some of our work, and then that's great. And then we either would meet them at a site, if they had one, and or we'd meet them at the office. If we'd meet them at the site, it's always good, and you can stand there and wave your arms and say wonderful things about it if you really feel good about it, very seldom would you feel bad about it, and that would be great, and you could maybe have a few photographs to take with you at the time in case come up they want to see other things. But normally, in the early days, it's that particular sort of meeting was to establish a rapport that you knew you could get along.
Oh.
And when Connor is alive, we both go.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd either like both of us or one of us or who knows what. But luckily, in most cases, they would like both of us. And we'd like them. Almost every case, we'd like them. And then if we met them at the office, we would sit and chat and find out what their various requirements were, and then meet them at the site, because it's very important to see where the site is going to be. Or they may come to us not having a site. In the case of Hernandez, that's kind of another story, because we did a little remodel for them on off Linda Vista, and then I spent a lot of time looking for sites with them. They'd call and say, well, I saw this site and this house. And I'd say yes or no or maybe and forget it and on until we found the right combination. So there's always different scenarios with each client. But generally, it would be at the site, and then we'd discuss what the fee would be and having a contract. And it was very, very seldom any competition about that, because
uh-huh.
Luckily, we had enough experience that we could, they would know that, and they'd know, by the combination of that, getting along with us and knowing the sort of work we did, then we'd sign an agreement and do the proper things to survey the property and soil tests, and then start doing schematics in our office, and at the point we're ready to show them some initial preliminary plans. It might be, depending on the complexity of it and the type of client, you might just show them schematics at first, area relationships, and if it's multi-story, how that might work. But normally we'd have a plan, so we'd show them, and then before we presented that plan, we would have the site, and we would schematically show them how we evolved. A client would automatically preconceive some sort of structure on the site. So we had to take them through a transition period of destroying their preconceived idea of it, and having them drive up and doing certain things and coming up the front door and experiencing certain things, if you know what I'm saying.
Why did their idea of what the site should have differ so much from yours?
Oh, well, they naturally, anyone would go to the site, they'd picture maybe a little, you know, a three-bedroom house there, or this kind of a funny roof in the garage, or in front, or you know, who knows what it would be, but it would be far from what we would do.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, the chances of their preconceived idea being similar to ours is very nil, almost nil. So, even so, we mentally and almost visually try to get them into understanding about the plan that we're about to show them. There's kind of a transition period there. So that we very logically, once we lay the plan out in front of them, we say, okay, you bring your car in here. The automobile is one of the most important things to get resolved first.
Oh.
And then greeting guests at the front door. What happens when you come in the front door? Do you go straight out, look out to the view? Do you, you obviously go into a living area, and how does that relate to dining, and so the whole thing is laid out, and they can start seeing, wandering through this space and visualizing it. The rub that is, most people can understand it pretty carefully. Some can't understand it one bit.
Really?
So you have the drawing, and you have to verbalize it, and you have to, and sometimes do little thumbnail sketches, and then it depends upon their sensitivity and intellect and what other factors, how soon they get it and understand it. So sometimes they see it immediately and get very excited, and other times they've got to sleep with it, and then you have more meetings. So it varies. It's always kind of fun, and it's much more fun when they see it right away and say, oh my God, that's it, that's wonderful, how exciting.
Sure.
I guess Plan Here is one of the first we did, and the Merriman House is one of the first we did. Mosley's preliminary sketch is hanging on his wall over there behind his computer. If you go up there again, you can see that I framed a little preliminary I did. I just had a little color to it. But that was basically the plan with refinements.
Huh.
And the longer we were at it, the older we got, the better we got at resolving the plan. Pretty quickly.
Sure.
In the end of the latter years, but very often it was the first scheme.
Mm-hmm. Was there a moment in the planning process that you enjoyed most generally with clients?
Well, yeah. Well, the most exciting is when you have a new client and a new job and you come up with a very exciting plan, and that's really good, and you do a presentation drawing which has furniture bids in it, and chairs and pianos and all that kind of stuff, and you landscape it, and you show it to them, and they love it, you know? That's really great. Nothing could be better.
Wow.
And the worst thing is they say, horrible, you know? Or they say, we have a feng shui expert, and we have to him to see it, and then they come back next week, and that's great, but turn the plan over, or move the entry door over. That's horrible.
When did people start using feng shui experts? A decade ago or longer?
Yeah, I think the one of my only very affected one, maybe, I remember three or four different jobs that affected us, but the one Chinese couple up in La Cunada, it really screwed up the plan. All the other ones we were able to work out somehow.
Huh.
That's another whole story.
Oh yeah? And so you just built it the way that they wanted to?
Oh no, we not the way they wanted it, but we couldn't build it. We had at the entrance there was an entry walkway which went right through the front door and out through the living room and out to the back terrace.
Yes.
Just a spline. And when you come in the front door, you go off to the dining room, you go off to the living room, or you go out to the terrace and all that. Well, in feng shui, you come in the front door, if you go straight out, that's letting all your good luck flow out.
Oh.
So, you can't have this spline going through. It's a very important focal point leading out to a great tree or piece of sculpture. You got to put a wall in front of it. So, you come into the space, instead of looking all the way through and seeing some nice, you look at a piece of art or you look at a wall, it stops you. Then you turn sideways and go out this way, then that's okay. But it gets into another whole category.
So did you put the wall there?
We had to move it up, yeah.
Huh.
We had to move, shift, and do some designs. It was not anywhere near as good,
huh.
But it was that it worked. You know?
Huh, that's interesting. You had mentioned drawing in the furniture sometimes. I know that sometimes you have landscaped and furnished your places and sometimes not,
do.
Right?
No, we always do.
Always?
Yeah, we did. In the early days, we helped people with interiors before they could hire interior decorators or interior designers. If we didn't help them, they could really screw it up. So we showed it what it should be. You know, it's a kind of certain things are natural in terms of seating and fireplace and view, sometimes you see magazines and there'll be a great living room and a fabulous view, and someone's got a sofa against the window looking back at the entrance instead of looking out, So we would put in what we felt was a general room arrangement, bed arrangement, a kitchen arrangement, and certain chairs and all those sort of things. And then we actually taught a little bit of landscape at school, and we were very good dear friends with Emmett Wimple, who taught landscape, and we did a lot of work with him. And we not only laid out the landscape on our preliminary drawings, but in some cases we designed the landscape for the completed house.
And you did that with the Carole King house?
Yeah, we just, there was absolutely nothing on here except some of the existing oaks, and we just a vocabulary of juniper, oleander, and Citrodora eucalyptus, and that was the basic theme, and that's what started all. And then Richard King, and then he loves working outside, so he takes over all the landscaping, the exterior, and Carole, his wife, takes over, and she's in charge of all the interior. But we designed, Conrad designed and made the coffee table, and we had those tuxedo sofas made specially, and the two armchairs made especially, and then Carole had the dining table. Well, Carole, she was editor of Designer West magazine, so
right.
She was no slouch when it comes to the interiors. But we designed the headboard, and Aaron designed this.
And the desk.
And Conrad had a hobby of coffee tables, and he made the coffee table there. See, the same logo is on his ring as on the coffee. He made his ring.
Oh, you both had the same ring?
No.
Oh, that's his ring.
And he made that as a hobby and vocation. This is one of 500 he made.
Beautiful.
But that's his. He did carved in wax and had chaos and steel and silver, and then he cut the bezel. That's ivory and turquoise. This is one of. I got about six or seven rings.
Beautiful.
But and then he made their, I'll show you the coffee table, you'll see that same logo I put in there.
Was that common for architects to do the furniture and the landscaping?
People like Wright and
Right?
Green.
Yeah.
And very seldom they do it now.
How do you think that changes you or makes you different as an architectural firm?
It didn't make any difference at all. Just that it became a, instead of drinking a lot of martinis, he started making furniture. It was much better for the health and all that.
Oh, sure.
But he just took it up as a hobby. I forget which he started first. I think he started on jewelry. Then he got into furniture making just as a pastime, and he actually enrolled in Eagle Rock High School night class, and he started having all the equipment down there.
Oh.
He made quite a few coffee tables and dining tables for my clients. But it wasn't a full-time thing, or he didn't have a real big workshop like Mosley did.
Sure. So you mostly drew where the furniture might go, and sometimes he would make the furniture.
Yeah, and toward the end there, when he was capable, he would, like the people and all, he would have to give them something to do, and that was his kind of a little hobby avocation. He didn't do it for making any money or all that, but.
That's great.
Yeah, it was very terrific.
Just a few more questions today. I was wondering, you've talked a lot about your clients and what they're like and the energy requirements of California, and I just have a general question. Would you say that your architecture reflects any political or social beliefs, or does it just exist in and of itself?
No social beliefs whatsoever.
None? Okay.
Zero, there are none. It's freedom or openness or, casualness, uniqueness, no social, none.
Okay, just more, it's more of an aesthetic that appeals to you.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, sure. Okay. And all these things aren't cast in stone. We have to be somewhat flexible depending on the clients. And there are certain things that we may change, like in this house, it doesn't have a change, in Mosley's house, it doesn't have a change, but if it had been designed for me, as opposed to those clients, there's something I would, like in Alex's, with a big workshop, and with this little movie theater for his wife.
Oh, right.
And originally, that was kind of going to be a gymnasium when they were big into all the heavy equipment, gym equipment. Now they don't have it at all. Waste of time, they go to gym, but then somewhere along the line, she thought how great this would be instead of a little gym, it'd be a small theater. And Alex had this home office away from the office. So all those little things come into it. And like this here, when we did this right after Carol and Richard were married, and it was a relatively low budget at the time, and so this was a multi-purpose room. But then, and when her mother, and when they could take a trip or something, her mother and father used to come over here, and they would, this would be their place they'd stay, but a little crowded with a piano in it, music room,
sure.
Guest room, and office. So that's when we did the tennis court, we did the pavilion, we designed that. So it's, you'll see it, completely contained unit, kitchen, office, bathroom, fireplace, sleeping, and little view, very dramatic out there.
Hmm.
Every job, everything is kind of unique. It's unique factors. It's not just something you get a client, you take open the file, and oh, let's see, and oh, this is good, you put it on the site. It doesn't work that way.
It depends so much on the client and the client.
Oh yeah, client and the site, the combination,
the site, yeah.
Their requirements.
Hmm. I know that Julius Shulman photographed many of your buildings, including the Merman House in Arcadia. Did you work closely with him? Are
oh,
you friends
yeah,
with
absolutely.
Him?
Oh, still friends. I used to do the forward for a book.
Tell me about how you met and your relationship.
Well, how we met, I'm really not sure, except that we knew that time, some 50 years ago, that he'd been photographing for Neutra and knew Wright and Schindler, and so we made contact with him and see if he'd photograph our house, and he met with us, and it was all I can kind of remember about that is that we commissioned him, we hire him to photograph the house, and when he was photographing, he was lecturing us about architecture.
Really?
So we'd look at each other saying, what the hell is going on here? We hired him, of course he's older than we are, which is great, but he's telling us about architects, we're the architects, he's the photographer.
What did he tell you, do you remember?
Oh yeah, he'd been involved with Neutra and Schindler and all these other great architects, and I guess if you look back, he was somewhat relating his experience with these great people, but all letting us know. I guess it maybe has something to do with, he didn't really drop names like saying, well, you know, we did this house for so-and-so and this and that. It was just giving his impression and trying to impress us, which he didn't need to do. And I don't know if he really knew that he was doing what he was doing. It was all interesting. I mean, but it made it. We were always when he was photographing. We were one or both of us were always there because we were interested in seeing what he was shooting, and telling what we wanted shot. But probably learning from him, I don't think he ever thought he'd learn anything from us. I'm sure he didn't. But Julius and I are still. I go up to his office all the time, and I see him when he's writing the forward, and I'm good friends with his daughter, and he's providing a lot of photographs for our book. He must have photographed 30 of our homes.
Wow.
So I just ordered a lot of transparencies for our book from him.
What do you find that you talk about today when you see him?
Yeah. you listen.
You listen? Still?
They're really funny.
So he's still telling you about architects?
Well, no, not so much in the architect. Now he tells about all the, he's, you know, extremely famous individual, and he's, all his books, so we're in very good, he'd say, Don, I just got a call from so-and-so, they want to see those pack of prints over there, they want those for this gallery they're doing over in Sweden. And that over there, that's the new liner they're doing. You're gonna have a bunch of my photographs on the ship. And then so-and-so from South America is coming up tomorrow. And he wants to talk about the photographs of so-and-so and so-and-so. And then the phone rings, and so when I went over there, he was doing the forward for the books. I went over to see him a week or so ago. And knowing for a while that I would have to sit there for about an hour before I even got around to talking about them.
Wow.
And then it was tough because he remembers Straub as part of the firm, And the book that we're doing is Buff and Hensman. But Straub is only a few years out of the 40 years that Conrad and our partners. And Kyle Straub had also written his own book, it's Cal Straub. So we don't feel negligent. We love Cal a lot. He was a great, great contributor to our firm and to our business. But it was really Buff and Hensman, then Buff Straub and Hensman for a little period, and Buff and Hensman for a long period. And so most of our firm is in Buff and Hensman for most of the time. And so, but Julius didn't really understand that phase. He always, as like a lot of our students that we had, always remember BS&H, or Buff Straub and Hensman. They all remember that, and some of the other professors, because we were all teaching at the same time, and we were doing a lot of our great homes at that same time, so it's hard for them to disassociate the name Straub from Buff and Hensman. Hmm. They just don't understand that particular period of time like I do. And Julius was kind of concerned about it, but he just has to understand that's the way it is. And it's understandable because he's involved with 20, 30, 40 different architects, people, and publishers, and many, many people. He can't keep everyone in the same category or
sure.
All the names, so it's understandable.
Where is his studio today?
It's up on right off of Laurel Canyon on Woodrow Wilson.
Okay.
Just roughly Mulholland Drive and Laurel Canyon.
Sure.
Been the same place Rafael Soriano designed it for many years ago, and
Okay.
He's very proud of it.
Yeah, right. Do you think that his photographs have had an influence on how the general public views architecture?
Oh, absolutely.
How so?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Not for ever since he started photographing, and now it's there's a resurgence now of contemporary architecture.
Yeah.
And have you been able to see his book called Modernism Rediscovered?
Yes, I've looked through it. Yeah.
Because we have 10 or 11 of our homes in that.
Yeah.
And that's all Julius Schumann, and that's it just came out, and then this new book, the case study book, the great big one.
Right.
And it's just a big new resurgence and understanding and appreciation of the 50 years of architecture there. I mean, we were right in the middle of it.
Sure.
Fortunately, and right after the war, and no one could have been, we were right after Neutter and Schindler and all of those people, that generation.
Yeah.
And right after the war when all these things were happening, so timing couldn't have been any better. And of course, being right here in the Pasadena area, it was great.
Has one of his photographs ever made you see one of your houses in a different way, or made you see something that you hadn't seen before?
It sounds like it's a certainly legitimate question. It's the only thing I remember is when he photographed my own house, Domus Solaris.
Yeah.
Sometimes he makes the houses look better than they are. Mine, he didn't make it look as good as, there's a couple of shots. Some of the shots, it's a hard thing to analyze.
Yeah.
It's a relatively small house, and it actually has a better feeling in some of his photographs. But that's only one case I can remember. Most of them, I have no complaints about his photograph whatsoever. They're, fantastic and superior and great. And I do remember that I was, other than that, I can't think of any cases.
Is there anything else you want to say about anything we've discussed today before we end for the day?
No, we've got a lot more to discuss.
We're okay.
Breaking the ground, so.
Great. What do you want to discuss next time? What are you thinking of right now?
Well, I guess starting the case study 28.
28, yep. That was going to be one of my first questions.
Yeah, I think we'll do that. It's late 60s.
Yeah.
And then how that all started. And then what I'll probably do is, in fact, Mosley and I, today we were putting all a whole bunch of files in chronological order, reshuffling and pinpointing them. So I'll be able to bring that list along.
Okay.
And then that'll give me periods of time and houses. And sometimes they get a little intermixed, I know, and I relate some to certain jobs, like right now, I can't tell the date of the governor's residence, but I remember doing the Lawrence Harvey job, the date that was, because a it's a memorable period, 59, just 43 years ago now, and then
sure,
and then things from then, and one relates to the other.
Okay.
So we got a lot more to talk about.
Great.
You can put up with it.
Absolutely. I'm enjoying it.